You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, thrilled to be with you for the next 1 hour. We're going to devote the middle section of this week's broadcast talking about the new electronic licensing system that the Minnesota DNR is officially kicking off this Tuesday, June 9th. We will have Kelly Straka, Fish and Wildlife Division Director from the agency, with us, and she's going to explain the background and give us all sorts of details on how it's going to work for you this Tuesday. It's going to be a big change for buying a license here in Minnesota. I think it's going to be a good change. Tim Lesmeister checking in with us from Alaska. Tim, someone here at Outdoor News is telling me we need to play Where's Waldo music every time I introduce you, because it's where is Tim today? And today he's on the Kenai Peninsula.
Yeah, no, yes, I'm up here because the opening for the Kenai River salmon, sockeye salmon, is just a few days away. So we're going to have some fun doing that. I'll probably get out here soon and try to get into some rainbow trout fishing on some of the lakes, which I do a lot of when I'm here in Alaska, but I do travel around a little bit. Now, you talked about that electronic licensing system. My prediction is in 10 years, it'll all be facial recognition, and all they'll have to do is go out in their boats and hit you with their facial recognition equipment, and it will tell them immediately if you have a fishing license or not. It's going to be the way that we're seeing technology expand so rapidly. I think it's just a matter of time. That's my prediction.
Yeah, you might very well be correct. I hope you're not. That's way too invasive from a privacy standpoint, in my view. But most citizens are more than willing to give away security for convenience, and that would be a next step. Anyway, we'll talk to Kelly about that a lot more here in a little bit. I'm going to get out fishing myself this weekend. I think I'm going to hit the river, Tim, down in the Winona area, get out with my kids. The river's fairly low right now. We've had some rain, and rain over the weekend forecasted here, so the river might bounce up a little bit, but with all the vegetation on the landscape now, it takes quite a bit of rain to start fluctuating river levels this time of year.
If I was going out on the river where you're going right now, I wouldn't focus on anything but the catfish. To me, that is, the catfish are in a spawning mode right now, and right, these things mm-hmm. are moving, and they're biting. Get me some 3 and 4 aught hooks, some big rigs, and I'd go out there and I'd chase some of those big flathead catfish out on the Mississippi River. I mean, that to me is about the most fun you can have on the river.
I like the small channel cats because I'll eat them. I won't eat a big old flathead. They're pretty nasty. They've been laying on the bottom of the river for a long time. You know, it's interesting how fish spawn at different times, isn't it, Tim? They all kind of take their turns. You have what, the burbot and then pike, sometimes even under the ice. And then you get into what, walleyes, and then the panfish and the bass, and then the catfish as you get into the summer, the warm water fish like cats. And then when you get into the fall, that's when your trout and salmon family, whitefish and lake trout and those species, they spawn in the fall.
Yeah, and don't forget the muskellunge. They're kind of a late spawner too, mm-hmm. which is why you don't see, muskies overtake a population of fish when it comes to pike. The northern pike spawn a lot earlier, mm-hmm. Very prolific spawners. And about the time those muskies eggs start hatching, those little northern fry are so big they can just swim around and gulp up all of the muskies. So, it's kind of interesting, like you said, how that happens, because you wonder just how something can you know, survive getting through that period when there's so much. Well, they basically become a forage instead of a predator fish.
Tim, speaking of fish, I don't know if you saw the story on the top of this week's Outdoor News. Tori McCormick did a nice job with it. It was a story. I'll tip my hat. The Star Tribune had it first. And then I saw Outdoor Life jumped all over it. I don't know. I thought their story was a little sensationalistic. I'm not that excited about this piece. It seems like there's so much, you know, room for error in this research that says that anglers in Minnesota are keeping 80 million pounds of sport fish annually, more than double the previous estimate. Like I say, statistically, even the researchers say there's a lot of variance here, a lot of room for error. But I guess nonetheless, it's an interesting headline, and we're catching and keeping a lot of fish one way or another here in Minnesota and around the country. I think, didn't it say between 2 and 6 billion pounds of sport fish nationwide? That's quite a range, but two to 6 billion pounds.
That's too much. And here in Minnesota, we have slot limits on a lot of the bigger lakes. We only allow you to keep one walleye over 20 inches in your bag limit. I mean, there's a lot of restrictions here that make me think that that number is inflated. And of course, they didn't take into consideration the non-game fish, because like in Iowa, if they would have incorporated bullheads into the program, then it would have far outshot any kind of harvest that they have here in Minnesota. So I think that there's a lot of states that would be much larger than us. And I think that that number is probably about twice what it should be.
One of the researchers said Minnesota's top three harvested fish were walleyes, perch, and then sunfish. All three of those fish species combined to make up the vast majority, roughly 80% of the state's total harvest each year. Yeah, walleyes are very popular. I guess I'm a little surprised perch is that high, although that's probably what I'm going to be targeting this weekend on the river. There's a lot of good yellow perch in the river these days.
I would have put crappie second. I would have thought that the crappie would probably easily fall into that second place.
Yeah.
And I would have put perch somewhere down a little farther for sure. I think that largemouth bass, I think if you grouped largemouth and smallmouth together, it'd be up there. I think more people harvest largemouth than they get credit for, because everyone considers that basically a catch and release species.
Right.
But I think that they've, again, I think that this, as I'm reading this article about this study, I'm thinking whoever did this study has never been to the Midwest.
And I guess I found it interesting, Brad Parsons telling Tori that the DNR is conducting no more than 10 angler creel surveys across the state right now. They used to do more. That's decreased. I thought there were more, honestly. It seems like, you know, I see DNR folks at landings frequently, but I guess a lot of times it's aquatic invasive species inspectors. You know, it's not creel surveys. So the DNR trying to gather data. I think, you know, there's a little more renewed interest in this. You know, how many fish are people taking home in the forward-facing sonar era?
And if you do a creel survey during like the walleye peak, rather than sometime in like August when it's dog days, you're going to have a big, huge fluctuation in how many fish are being caught. So, yeah, a lot of this, now with forward-facing sonars. I was just having a conversation with an angler here a few days ago about forward-facing sonars. And they were saying that it has made an incredible difference in the way people fish. And just about every boat has it on there now. And it just blows me away, because I was actually pricing out a transducer and a module for my boat that I use up on Lake Superior. And just the transducer and module was $3,000. I mean, wow. That's not a cheap option to get into something like this.
You can buy, you know, cheaper versions, but without a doubt, and we've talked about this, Tim, you know, guys are running around in $60,000, $70,000 pickups with a $100,000 boat. What's another 2-3% for a forward-facing sonar when everybody out there is using them? You feel like you got to have it if you're going to catch fish, if you're going to compete with the other folks on the water.
Yeah, and, you know, I always used to say that finding fish was something that about only 3% of the anglers out there were very adept at, and that there were a lot of anglers that could catch fish. But finding them was the trick. And now I think it's with the forward-facing sonar, that's changed dramatically. I'd say the percentage is about probably, with forward-facing sonar, I'd probably say over 50% of the anglers now don't have a problem finding fish. So a harvest is definitely going to increase.
Outdoor News Radio here, about to wrap up this segment. Tim, there was another point in this story that made it suspect for me again. This research, Tori's story was great. It says the study shows Minnesota is the nation's number one state for so-called catch and keep fishing. The state makes up about 10% of national catch. Now, I've been to Florida a few times and seen how much they love fishing down there. You live in Florida half the year. I'm, I guess, shocked that Minnesota would be ahead of Florida for even catch and keep fishing. Your impressions?
People that do fish ocean fish, they'll keep everything they legally can when they catch it. And that because it's great eating. It's phenomenal eating fish. Now, me, on the other hand, I don't know why I have a very strong catch and release ethic. I'll go out fishing offshore, and I could catch 40 or 50 fish and maybe only keep 8 or 10 because I'm keeping a meal or a couple of meals. Where I do see people at the boat landings where we're cleaning fish, bring in bucket loads of grunts and mangrove snappers. And if they can keep grouper, I guarantee you there's not a grouper going back.
Now, Tim, you know, it just occurred to me, and shame on me, that this study mostly did focus on freshwater fish. So when you restrict it to freshwater, I guess I might believe we're the number one state for keeping fish. Although there's a lot of freshwater fishing in Florida too, right? Although, is it mostly bass though, and guys aren't keeping those?
Bass down in Florida are revered. They're rarely kept. But the crappie fishing down there in Florida is outstanding. I fish a couple lakes down in Florida that have tremendous crappie fishing, and I'll guarantee you that every crappie that comes to the boat for most anglers is kept. And so you look at Tennessee, where you have, you know, like Real Foot Lake and some of these lakes that have all these big crappies, and I guarantee you that a vast majority of those crappies don't get thrown back. So, you know, I we're 10%. I'd say we're much lower than that in regards to other states. I don't think that we're even number one.
Yeah, we like to put fish under the knife, though. But anyway, read that whole story by Tori McCormick at OutdoorNews.com. Tim, let's grab a break. You'll circle back with me at the end of the show?
Absolutely.
That's Tim Lesmeister. I'm Rob Gerisline. Let's grab a break. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
This Father's Day, don't just buy Dad another tie. Give him a legacy that will last for generations. Rite has a gun to fit his needs, whether he's in the turkey woods, duck blind, or plinking in the backyard. Dad deserves a firearm that works as hard as he does. Rite features a limited lifetime warranty, unmatched customer service, and undeniable performance. Its precision engineering meets world-class aesthetics. Make this Father's Day one he'll never forget. Visit RiteUSA.com or your local dealer today.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at FiresideLodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit RainyLakeHouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks for joining us for another segment. Hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com, or you can call us at 800-535-5191. Subscribe to our print or digital versions. Hey, this coming week, something really big is going down. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is officially unveiling its new electronic licensing system, ELS. You've seen that those three initials everywhere here in recent weeks. I feel very lucky to have Kelly Straka, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. She's joining me right now for a segment or two to talk about the big launch. Kelly, thanks a lot for carving out the time to discuss the new system with me. I know it's been a big process to get to this point, and you guys probably got butterflies in your stomach as we kick this off.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. You're absolutely right. This is a very exciting time for the state. I'm really excited to be involved in this project and can't wait for the big launch that we have coming up. So thanks for having me today.
So I want to take our time here and kind of go through what's going to happen. Let's start out with where we were, and then we'll talk about what's happening this week and through this weekend, and then what's going to happen on Tuesday, June 9th. First of all, where we were, the existing, we're calling it legacy system now, ELS system, electronic licensing system, is, I guess, 25 years old. I remember when your predecessor, Dave Ulfeldt, talked about getting this process going, and he joked that the system was old enough to drink. Well, now it's, what, old enough to, I guess, have a discount on car insurance if it's over 25 years. It's been a long process. Can you talk about the old system a little bit? I don't know if you were around for much of that, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And the joke for my predecessor, I heard it too. I was certainly on board for those conversations. And you're right about the car insurance discount. So it has been about 25 years that we've been on the legacy system. And I would say that as a user of the legacy system, I think it served us really well. We are fortunate to have that. It was a great system. It's just the reality is that it is 25 years old. And so even being able to maintain a system that old, the vendor at the time could no longer maintain it. So we had that. And we also knew more recently, certainly what we're seeing in other states, certainly what we're hearing from our user base, our license buyers, is wanting to have some new things that the current system didn't have. But I think that's where a big part of it, when we talk about that system was great for a long time, and we knew it was time to modernize.
I know from working in my own business that you run into that. You have an old system that works, but it gets to the point you can't find people to maintain it because of the way the software is written, or, you know, whatever it might be. Anytime I jump on and use the system the past few years, it was like, wow, this is, you could just tell the way it was laid out, the fonts, whatever. It was just old. So the process got going here several years ago. You looked for a vendor, tell me if I'm wrong, that had maybe implemented a similar modern system in other states. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there was originally, and this was before my time on the project, so I'll have to keep it a little high level. But yes, we put out what's called an RFP, or a request for a proposal. There aren't too many companies across the country that can do these kinds of systems. There are several. And so certainly the bid went out and the contract was awarded to a group called S3. And now S3, right shortly after that contract was signed, was purchased by a group called Payit. Now Payit does run hunting and licensing systems in other states like Arkansas, Mississippi. They also do some vehicle boat titling registrations, I believe, in Louisiana. And so certainly that was one of our things, is wanting to make sure that we were having a vendor that does run similar systems in other states, and we can therefore benefit from the lessons they've learned there, and vice versa, right? Other states can have the same license system that Minnesota has. And so I think we'll start to see some consistency between states that way too.
The process, I think DNR would admit, has taken longer than you initially wanted it to. I think anyone who has implemented a new software system has some patience and some understanding for what DNR has gone through. It always takes longer than you think.
Yeah, there have been quite a few changes along the way, and the recognition, you know, to kind of come full circle to how we started this conversation, we're dealing with a 25-year-old legacy system that has an incredible amount of data. And so even recognizing wanting to make sure that we can maintain all of the existing data and maintain user profiles for all of our customers and be able to transfer those to the new system, that's a big part of this too. And so the system as a whole is massive. It's a lot bigger than hunting fishing licenses. I'm sure we'll talk about this, but that's the recognition of this project turned out to be quite a bit bigger than I think anyone was anticipating on the front end.
You know, when you hear that you're working with a vendor that's worked in other states, I think the layperson might say, well, gosh, can't you just insert the word Minnesota for Mississippi and plug and chug? It's not that simple, though, is it?
Yeah, that's one of the things we learned along the way with this project is I'm certainly acknowledging that we have, you know, our license catalog is over 400 products and we have things that are unique to Minnesota. When I think about our combination licenses with spouse vouchers. So that is something that the other states didn't have. And so all of a sudden it was having to create these new things in the licensing system that the vendor hadn't worked through before. And so it's really been, I think, a great learning opportunity for all of us involved on the project. But those are the things that, you know, you can't always account for in some of those planning timelines. And so we're just really excited to be where we are right now.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Jerisline. We are talking with Kelly Strock of the Minnesota DNR's Fish and Wildlife Division Director about the new ELS system, electronic licensing system, which is going into place this Tuesday, June 9th. We just talked about some of the background on the existing system. Let's talk about this transition week, which we're in the middle of right now, Kelly. What's basically happening? You're transferring over the old licensing system data into the new system so we can launch it on Tuesday?
100%. So the cutover period from transitioning to the old legacy system to our new ELS, that period started at 11:59 on June 1st. And so running all the way up until public launch on June 9th, we're going to be in that cutover period. And what that really allows is time for all the data migration. The reason your listeners care about this is because that means that all of our user profiles for licenses we've already purchased, this year's fishing license, if you already have yours, or even your history of license purchases, all that's going to migrate to the new system. And so it's really exciting and really important that we get that migration right. And so people can log in, create their account on day one, on Tuesday, June 9th, be able to create your account, and you'll be able to see your existing licenses right there in your history for you.
I think everybody, don't we all have a customer number? Will that customer number transfer over or are we going to need new ones?
100%. Users will be able to use their DNR customer number, and that'll be a great way to be able to get into your profile.
Okay. And another interesting wrinkle in this transfer is since license sales ended at midnight this past Monday going into Tuesday, and the DNR can't sell any licenses until midnight going into Tuesday morning, June 9th, it's not like if you don't have a license, we're not telling people you can't fish. We're saying, by golly, you got a bonus week here, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I've heard people refer to it as a holiday, and I don't really know if I look at it as a holiday, but certainly we absolutely recognize we want people outdoors, right? Regardless if you can buy a license right now or not. And so from all the way up until June 9th, you will be able to fish without a license during that period. But again, come Tuesday, June 9th, you better get online and get yourself a license so you'll be all ready to go.
All regular rules and regulations still apply. You got to abide by the limits. You got to abide by fishing hours where they exist. Conservation officers are still going to be out enforcing those rules. It's just that if you didn't buy your license before Monday at midnight, you're gonna get a week where you can go test the water, so to speak, without a license.
Spot on, Rob. Well done.
Okay. Timing kind of good, right? There's no hunting going on. We're after the turkey season ended. We're after two really important weekends of fishing license purchases prior, of course, to the opener back in early May and then Memorial Day weekend. Those are got to be two of the biggest weekends for buying licenses in advance. So a lot of people have already bought their fishing licenses, probably most folks. It also coincides with this Take a Kid Fishing weekend, which is June 5th to the 7th, when a lot of folks don't need to buy a license anyway. So I presume the timing of this is not accidental.
You know, folks, it's almost like Rob knows exactly what went into this decision, but you're completely right. And so the seasonality, what I would look at is the seasonality of our seasons, both hunting and fishing. This window was intentionally chosen for that. You know, we ran up until knowing leading up even until the governor's fishing opener, our statewide fishing opener, really busy time for license sales. We also know with the turkey season structure the way it is, we didn't want to make this transition in the middle of the turkey seasons, right? How confusing that could be for people too. And so just recognizing that this time really did coincide with a lower period of license sales so that we can get the system up and rolling, get people logged in with no interruption.
It strikes me as a marketing opportunity for DNR, encouraging folks, go out and if you want to go try fishing again, see if you want to get into it, test it this weekend and then buy a license on June 9th.
See how exciting that is? And I will just say, I mean, I don't think fishing in Minnesota needs more marketing, but it always does. Let's be honest. It speaks for itself once you get out there. So hopefully folks will take this opportunity to get out, get some fishing, bring the kids, enjoy it. And it's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. So I know I'll be out there as well.
Kelly, let's grab a break and then come back and we'll talk about what the new system will look like when it kicks off on Tuesday, June 9th.
Sounds great. Thanks.
That's Kelly Straka from the Minnesota DNR. Let's grab a break. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
A bullseye rash can be the first sign of Lyme disease, but not everyone will develop the rash. If you've been in areas where Lyme disease is common and develop fever, fatigue, facial paralysis, or joint and muscle pain, seek medical care. Reduce your chances of getting Lyme disease by wearing insect repellent, showering soon after coming indoors, and checking for ticks daily. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme. A message from CDC.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thank you for tuning in. We are here every week on this station, so I hope you enjoy the broadcast. If so, there's a whole lot more to read in the print edition of Outdoor News or at OutdoorNews.com. You can subscribe to print or digital versions there. Real quick, before we return to our conversation with Kelly, I want to throw out a little plug for my friends at the Minnesota Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Next weekend up at the Superior National Forest, June 12th to 14th, members of the Minnesota Chapter are going to be hosting a stewardship and campout weekend. They're going to be doing some trail maintenance work near the St. Louis River, and then they're going to go check out some potential copper nickel mine sites and find out more details about what that is all about. Great organization, good cause out there working to do some public lands improvement in an era when public land agencies are desperate for some help. They're very low staff these days. More details at backcountryhunters.org/events. I want to continue our conversation right now with Kelly Straka. She is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. We are talking about the launch of the new electronic licensing system, which officially kicks off this Tuesday, June 9th. This is a big deal. Kelly and I spent the last segment talking about the legacy system, which we've had for about 25 years, of the transition week, which is wrapping up as the clock strikes midnight going into Tuesday morning. And let's talk about what this new system looks like. Where do we start here, Kelly? I guess basically there's an app for that, right? Is that a good place to start?
That's a great place to start. I think the mobile app is one of the things that we have heard for years from licensed buyers. Man, we really need this in Minnesota. I think anybody who goes and recreates in the outdoors in other states, you know, certainly has seen the advantages of having a mobile app. And so really excited to be able to be rolling out the mobile app for the new licensing system. And so everybody will be able to enjoy that, having everything right on their smartphones in their pocket.
So there's going to be multiple ways to buy a license, correct? You can buy it through an app. I can buy it, I presume, still online at mndnr.gov, or I can still go to a retailer, old school.
Yeah, this is the really important point that I want to make very clear, is one of the biggest advantages of this system. There's new shiny tools, absolutely, but it's just really increasing flexibility. So to your question of how to get a license, yes, we will have a mobile app. That's something that Minnesota's never had. And we will still continue to support the internet purchase. So you can just go online on a laptop or even at your local library. You can get on a computer there. So certainly we will have internet purchases available. And also that route that I think is so important is visiting our license agents. So those businesses across the state of Minnesota that sell hunting and fishing licenses, certainly continuing that more traditional way of getting your license. And I think that's so important, especially in some of our rural areas. I live rurally as well. Being able to visit these shops and absolutely support their business, but purchase the license the way you always have, if that was the way that you did it previously.
And if you buy that license from a retailer, that business is still getting a little taste where they get 50 cents or a buck for every license sold to make it worth their while?
Yeah, they do get a little bit off every license sold, which really helps. And one of the big changes that I think we'll see is that there will be no longer your license printed in a durable tag. So the tag that you're used to kind of getting. So just recognize that your license itself is going to be printed on 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So it doesn't change. I mean, it's still, you know, something you can hold in your hand, but it will just be printed on regular printer paper. So that is a change that I think people should be aware of.
Okay, I don't claim to be the most digitally savvy person on the planet, but I do. I use my smartphone all the time, and I use all sorts of apps, so I'm looking forward to this. I can't download the app until Tuesday, right? This weekend, I can't download it?
Correct. You will not be able to download the app until we launch. The other thing I will say is part of us rolling this out was that we actually pulled in some folks across the state and certainly across the department that had never purchased a hunting and fishing license before. So we pulled in total newbies, Rob, and asked them, hey, can you please go buy this license, or can you please go get this walk-in access validation? And they were able to navigate the system really well. And so we got really positive feedback from new users. And so don't feel, if anyone's out there, is a little overwhelming and man, there's a lot of these things that are just, they seem like barriers to entry. They're not. And so I'm hoping that people find that mobile app really easy to use, even if you've never purchased a license before.
So a hunting and fishing geek like me, it's not going to be able to sleep early Tuesday morning. I'm going to be logging. I'm going to be going to the app store at 2 a.m. I suspect. I'm looking for something that says Minnesota DNR licensing. I look for that app and I'm going to download it like any other app. And then do I need my customer number to log in? How challenging is it going to be for me to log in the first time?
Well, first of all, I think like you, I haven't slept either. So I'm equally as excited, looking forward to this. But yes, you'll be able to go in, download the app onto your phone. You can log in with your DNR customer number. And I think that's a change too, that people will be really excited to see. You will have to create an account, but you will be able to use that DNR customer number. So I suggest people have that handy.
Okay. So Kelly, I download the app. I'm able to log into it. I purchase my license on it. Obviously, I'm going to need Wi-Fi or cellular coverage probably to purchase it. Once I've done that, does it stay on my phone even if I'm outside, you know, cellular range in the heart of the boundary waters and a CO bumps into me?
So this is one of the very exciting things that we are going to be able to offer our licensed buyers is that, yes, if you go out of cell range, if you go away from Wi-Fi, which I cannot recommend enough, everybody do every chance we get, but you can still access your licenses offline. The important thing is certainly if you're going to go and let's say you're going to go harvest a species up in the boundary waters and it needs to be registered, you're going to want to make sure that you're logged in before you go out of range so that you can actually go in and do a registration, even if you're off. But regardless, your licenses, if you're just talking about trying to pull up your licenses in areas without cell phone coverage, you absolutely will be able to do so.
So the license is going to be on my cell phone. That's how I'm going to show a conservation officer proof of licensure, correct? Now, Kelly, yes. I'm sorry. I got to find ways to try to stump you here. But let's say I'm in the boundary waters for a week and I'm fishing and my cell phone doesn't have a charge anymore and a COS for the license. Am I in trouble? Huh?
This is an enforcement question. This is a tricky one. Okay. Here's what I will say. If your cell phone dies, I always recommend everybody bring an external charger into the boundary waters like I do every time just for safety. But also what I will say is that officer should be able to look you up right into the system as well. And so again, I would make sure that you do everything you can. The statute still applies where you have to have your license technically on your person. So make sure you have your cell phone in your pocket, but understanding things happen. And I would also say things are up to officer discretion. Absolutely. And I have incredible respect for our officers. So I think as long as you are abiding by all rules and regulations, which I'm assuming everybody is, then certainly our officers would be willing to work with you on that.
I would think so too. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisein, we're chatting with Kelly Straka, Minnesota DNR Fish and Wildlife Division Director. Just a few minutes left. We're talking about the new electronic licensing system, which kicks off here on Tuesday, June 9th. Kelly, I'm trying to think of some other aspects of how the public interacts with the DNR that might get wrapped into this new system. Hunt firearm safety classes, can you register for those through the app? What about buying my trail stickers for, an ATV, for my boat? Will that eventually all be through the same new system? And will that be available immediately, or is that like a phase two?
I'm really excited you brought up the fact that we are phasing the rollout of the electronic licensing system. And here's what that means. This phase one that is going to launch on Tuesday, June 9th, that phase will have your hunting and fishing licenses as well as your trail passes. That will be going live on Tuesday, June 9th. However, we are working already on phase two, which is all of our vehicle titling and licensing. So those are your boat registrations and titles, your kayak, your canoe, your ATVs, your snowmobiles, all of the vehicle stuff. That is going to come in the next phase. Now, what I will say about that is to come full circle, legacy system for the vehicle titling and registration is still live. So users will not see any interruptions, no changes there until we move this over into the new system, which as of right now, we're slating, hoping to be able to roll out yet this year. But for Tuesday, June 9th, recognize that that's going to be changes to the hunting and fishing licenses and trail passes as well. So that's really exciting.
Kelly, long term, this new flexible system is going to give the agency some options, I would think, maybe with different types of licenses. That's in the future, I presume. That's not something you're unveiling now. You're not unveiling like a one-day resident license. It seems like there's an opportunity for new sales there where people might spontaneously buy a license. Hey, I'm out. Gosh, I've got the opportunity to fish. All of a sudden now they can buy a license immediately, or maybe they'd be more likely to do that if they bought a 1 or a 3 day license.
Yeah. To your question about what's to come in the future, I think that's absolutely right. So we aren't making any changes to our license catalog right now. However, we are talking about what are we going to do with our license packages in the state of Minnesota? And so certainly those conversations are coming. As of right now, we're not proposing any changes. So you won't see any changes in the licenses that are offered in the catalog starting on Tuesday, June 9th. The one other thing I would add, Rob, because you asked a question earlier and I don't think I touched on it, was firearm safety registration. And a lot of those other sort of enrolling in even our adult hunter programs, those are intended to be part of this system moving forward. They will not be live. That will not be live on Tuesday, June 9th, but that will be coming. So that's something that people can look forward to as well.
Well, Kelly, we've covered a lot of ground. I appreciate you carving out all this time for me. I can tell you're excited about it. I think everyone's pretty optimistic as we're going into the weekend that we're going to kick this baby off.
Yeah, I think we are. We're really excited. We've had a chance to get in, obviously, and see the system, play around in the system, buy some things, explore new features like linked accounts, so you can actually purchase licenses for your kids, keep everything connected to your account. Spouse vouchers will be able to be sent directly to your spouse if you've got a linked account to them.
Excellent.
So I just think there's going to be more flexibility and more features, and I can't wait for people to take a chance to explore it.
Good. Well, I'm sure we'll know a whole lot more about it a week from now when we've all downloaded it onto our smartphones. Kelly, thanks for all your hard work on this project. To you and everyone else at DNR, and good luck in the coming week.
Thanks, Rob. We're really excited. Get outside.
Good advice. Kelly Straka from the Minnesota DNR talking about the new electronic licensing system. It starts Tuesday, June 9th. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
This Father's Day, don't just buy Dad another tie. Give him a legacy that will last for generations. Retay has a gun to fit his needs, whether he's in the turkey woods, duck blind, or plinking in the backyard. Dad deserves a firearm that works as hard as he does. Retay features a limited lifetime warranty, unmatched customer service, and undeniable performance. Its precision engineering meets world-class aesthetics. Make this Father's Day one he'll never forget. Visit RetayUSA.com or your local dealer today.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Driesline. Thanks for tuning in. Final segment of this week's broadcast. Thank you, Kelly Straka from the Minnesota DNR, who spent two segments with us talking about the new ELS that is kicking in here on Tuesday, June 9th. Be prepared for that. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wind it down. A reminder, if you like what Tim and I talk about, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions. Hey, Tim, a couple chronic wasting disease stories in this week's paper that I thought we could talk about. One, they found chronic wasting disease outside what National Elk Refuge. That is the nation's largest wild elk herd, and it's a little scary. If you get CWD in that elk herd, you're going to wipe out a lot of big, beautiful animals.
Well, they have a tendency to concentrate these elk out there because they have these food feeding areas. And in the wintertime, these elk come in by the huge numbers down into these feeding areas. And they're saying, maybe we should quit feeding these elk. Maybe it'll spread them out a little bit. The problem is if you do that, then of course you're going to probably have more, you won't have the ability to control where they're at. And so there'll be some automobile accidents. There are other reasons why they do this.
Well, they'll be getting on private ranches.
Private ranches,
and,
yes.
And the I think that's the reason that refuge exists. My dad worked for a guy who was the manager at that refuge for many years. When Dad was at Sherburne, that manager at Sherburne eventually went out to National Elk. We visited him a couple times. This is in the 80s. And I remember asking my dad, what's up with this? Why does this refuge exist? And, you know, at the time, my dad said, well, that elk herd probably wouldn't be able to maintain as big elk herd. That's the herd that comes down out of the Yellowstone ecosystem, right? That's where they winter, right? They migrate down.
And feed them there.
And he said that herd, you know, probably wouldn't be able to be as big if he didn't have that feeding program because, yeah, they'd spread out on these ranches and the ranchers would freak out and be upset. And so, you know, if you like seeing those elk in Yellowstone every year, you got to support National Elk Refuge. And how do you do that now if we're talking about that herd being potentially mass infected with CWD?
I had somebody say to me here not that long ago, well, just let the ones that are strong survive. Because, you know, they think of it like it's a virus where some of the people or some of the animals will survive and they'll be stronger for it and they'll pass on these genetics. And I said, no. You're talking about a prion here that infects these animals and basically it destroys their brain. It's not something that you can build up a tolerance for. It's not something that you can survive and not get it again. It's once you get the CWD, it's basically going to eat at you until you die. And that's what happens to these animals. And if one or two of them in the herd have it and they come in together and they're feeding and they, you know, basically spread this, then it's not long before it basically has the capability of wiping out huge numbers of the herd.
Yeah, it's 100% fatal. Any cervidae that gets it dies. Now, are there some that are quote unquote resistant who are less likely to get it? I'm not well versed enough to know that, but I've talked to a lot of scientists who say, you know, that scenario where we'll just build resistance is going to take centuries, you know. And they say, well, we've done it with mad cow. Well, yes, that's because they're domestic, and any time a domestic cow got CWD in Europe or the bovine version of CWD, you killed it. You got it out of the system and you can control it in domestic herds. You can't do that with deer and elk that are spread all across the continent.
That's the problem. You know, there is no control of this. There's always been this thought that we can go in and thin the herd. And if it's a thinner herd, then we can spread the animals out. And the ones that are infected will die before they infect these other animals. But that's some of the states are now saying, well, that's not going to work, that we're not even going to try to do that anymore. And in this elk population, they're saying, well, just quit feeding them. That'll, you know, naturally thin the herd. I don't think that's going to work either. These animals are conditioned now. It's going to be tough to get it to the point where we have a situation where these animals won't be infecting each other.
You know, there's some chatter about, you know, will wild predators like wolves and cougars help contain the spread of this? They might. I mean, I think a semi-sick elk that maybe the human eye can't detect is more likely to, you know, a predator is more likely to isolate that one and kill it before it spreads the disease as much. But I think the jury is out on whether or not, you know, that's going to help. If that, you know, there's some talk of that Wisconsin, could wolves, you know, help keep it out of northern Wisconsin? I think that's a little bit of wishful thinking. Believe me, I wish it were the case, but we just got a serious problem here with CWD. And I wrote my column about it also, Tim, and just talking about how some of these states, Illinois sounds like they're kind of throwing in the towel on CWD management. We talked about how the Minnesota DNR is backing off in some key deer permit areas down in southeastern Minnesota. And then, you know, there's also more research going into can CWD jumped the species barrier into people the way mad cow did. I mean, that's the only reason we're ultimately talking about CWD and human health is because for years they said, no, mad cow's not going to jump into people. And then it did. This was in the 1990s and it killed, what, 35, 40 people over there before they got it contained. And all science suggests it's not going to happen with Cervidae and chronic wasting disease, but there's never 100% in science.
You know, I lived over in England in 97 and 98 during this mad cow, and you couldn't find a steak on a menu over there. And there was just no meat available. And what you could buy at the butcher was super cheap. I was eating a lot of steak back then. And it was pretty incredible. And I think what you're going to see, and when I was reading your column, this crossed my mind, was that I think deer testing for CWD hunters are going to find that this is just becoming the norm. It's not going to be, have you had your deer tested for CWD? The question will be, what did your test show that you had done on the deer that you killed? Because I think it's just going to be everybody is going to get these kits. Hopefully someone will have them so they're very economically priced. There'll be enough of them sold. And then it's just everyone's going to test their deer.
I want to credit Jim Robbins, freelancer for the New York Times, who wrote the piece. And then Steve Rinella and the gang at Meat Eater on their podcast last week, they were talking about that story. And then Rinella interviewed this researcher, this Catherine Hay, I believe is her name. She's from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in Hamilton, Montana. And they talked about the research they've done where they literally took, you know, they call it organoids. They took human tissue and infected deer tissue with CWD. And I mean, they mixed it together. They did everything they could to try to infect that human tissue, and they couldn't do it. And so, you know, that's really good news that they've been unable to do that. And then they talked about Creutzfeldt-Jakob, kind of the human variant. Have those rates of Creutzfeldt-Jakob increased in areas where there is CWD? Could we be seeing more of that as a result of CWD? And she said the incubation period is about 8 years, and we're just not seeing it. You're as likely to get CJD in an area without chronic wasting disease as you are in an area that has CWD. It's spontaneous. It's extraordinarily rare. It's like 1 in 2.5 million or something like that. And we see those rates consistent everywhere. So that's good news. It really looks like this disease can't jump the species barrier into humans, at least not yet.
Yeah, but I want to know if my deer that I shot has CWD. It's something that will help the Department of Natural Resources manage this better if they know where, you know, because I believe that there might be more of it out there than we even realize. Because, you know, a deer can have CWD and it's not showing up in them right away.
Sure.
It takes a few years for this to really harm the animal and kill it, but it would be nice to know.
Yeah, I'm going to get any deer I take tested, and if it's got CWD, I'm not going to eat it. Yes, I know it's highly unlikely that it's going to jump the species barrier, but I'm not willing to make me and my family, a case study in that experiment. One final little note, Tim, they talked about, could it jump the barrier into cattle? And I believe she said they really haven't done a lot of that testing yet, but she wants to do that. I tell you what, look out. If CWD ever jumps into domestic cattle, deer hunting's over. Deer populations might be over, right? I mean, you look at bison. That's one reason we keep bison off the landscape, is because of ranchers being concerned about brucellosis. If they thought deer could infect cattle with CWD, we'd be limiting deer populations. They'd be minuscule across the country.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it would be terrible if that happens. I'm glad that you don't see the deer and the cow population, the cattle, you know, they don't tend to get together very often. I rarely see that, but boy, if it did, it'd be awful.
Well, Tim, sorry to be kind of have a negative topic to wrap up the show, but I think the good news is we're still seeing research that says, you know, this is a deer health issue, not a human health issue, and that's the silver lining, at least to date. Safe travels up there. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. I'll let you know how the fishing was when I catch up to you soon.
All right. Tim Lesmeister checking in with us from Alaska, the Kenai Peninsula. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.